Good morning. You can see that our ranks are light. We had some unexpected events and problems, and we are waiting for one person, and we are assuming if Eric Anderson can join us, which we're trying to track him down right now, we'll have a quorum. But what we want to do is to get started with our non-action items, items that we can do, move forward on that do not require a quorum. So thank you very much, and please bear with us. And we do have a lot of things that we can get done. And as soon as we find out about Eric, you'll let us know.
Good morning, Chair Cantu, members of the board and public. I've just learned from Eric Anderson that he's about 45 minutes away due to unexpected traffic. So he'll join us with the meeting in progress. And since we're conducting announcements at the beginning of the meeting, I just would like to remind the board that with your indulgence, I will be attending the California Coastal Commission, which is also meeting today in Imperial Beach on border issues. I will be there speaking in support of Secretary Garcia. That may require I have to leave by about 12 noon, and in which case I'll leave Kelly Dorsey, Assistant Executive Officer remotely, and Eric or Roger Mitchell, rather, sitting next to me to fill in for me. And thank you very much.
Certainly understood. Let's go through the motion of trying to declare a quorum. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Anderson's not here yet. Ms. Blair, Dr. Olson, Mr. Strawn,
Here.
Ms. Warren,
Here.
Chair Cantu.
Here. So we do not have a quorum, but we're going to proceed with our non-action items. To get started, I'm going to invite you to join me in a moment of silence to recognize the unmeasurable suffering that is happening in Israel and in Gaza for all the innocent people who are feeling tremendous pain and suffering. Almost everybody is missing a family member or knows of somebody who is missing a family member at the very least, and many have lost lives. It's a moment for us to think about how can we proceed in our lives, seeking increased understanding and developing that capacity to bridge the gaps that we see all around us also, not quite as stark, hopefully, as what they are seeing, but it's incumbent on all of us to help the world embrace peace, even as in our own little worlds as we go about. So just take a moment, and if you would be so kind to join me in recognizing our where we are fortunate and where we have an obligation and where we can grieve with the people in Israel and in the West Bank, probably, and in Gaza. Thank you. Thank you. Let's start with a public forum then. We won't be able to take any actions, but we can certainly hear the people's business. And do we have any cards from public forum? We have one. So maybe if you could give me cards as you have them, and we can then call them up.
Andrew Meyer.
Good morning. Thank
Good
you
morning.
very much. Thank you for the warm response. My name is Andrew Meyer. I work for the San Diego Audubon Society. I've been here before, but not in several months. So I apologize for not coming more often. I'd like to give a brief update to the board about the Mission Bay set that you have funded and the work of the city on the northern corner of Mission Bay and the place where the San Diego Audubon Society and the large coalition has the Love Mission Bay project going. I have way less than 3 minutes to share, but it's 3 minutes the max.
Generally, we say 3 minutes, yes.
Great. Okay, I shouldn't have asked. Well, thank you very much. So the just very quickly, the Rewild Mission Bay project is a project that's been going for over 10 years. I haven't been here in a while, like I said, so a very brief update on it. It's based in the master plan for the Mission Bay Regional Park. which called more than 30 years ago for restoring tidal wetlands in the northeast corner of the bay, where Rose Peak comes into the bay, and where the remnant marsh, about 40 acres, a little postage stamp of memory of tidal wetlands in Mission Bay, still exists.
And, that sounds louder. Yes, thank you. we actually just had the Living Coast Discovery Center join our coalition. So we are now 80 organizations that are speaking with one voice to the city of San Diego about prioritizing tidal wetland restoration in their planning process, which is underway. The coalition that we lead is labor unions, education groups, a lot of environmental groups, a lot of local businesses, all telling the city that wildest wetland acreage, which is from our feasibility study, is what we can do. It's feasible there. That's what we should be doing. And the city is in a tougher location because they have to figure out how to do as much tidal wetland restoration as they can and fit in all of the other land uses that are there and should be there. So the update over the spring and summer is that several advisory committees to the City Parks and Rec Department have weighed in on the version of the city's version of the plan. They call it the De Anza Natural Plan, which is an update of the planning that they've been doing for 7 to 8 years. All of these city committees agree with us that the plan needs to model and react to sea level rise, and it has not so far. The city released their version of a draft programmatic EIR in March of this year, so that's progress. They're moving along, it's great, but that had very little information on sea level rise and had no modeling for sea level rise. We appreciate the leadership that the regional board has shown on this, writing sea level rise modeling right into the SEP language, and that the regional board staff, especially Chris Means, has stood firm that the city's plan is not acceptable unless it plans with and for sea level rise. We are waiting to see the city's modeling and hope and expect the city to have modeling for both their preferred alternative, which again they released in March, and the wetlands optimized alternative, which is the land use alternative specifically funded through the SEP and closest to our wildest plan. Most important, with support from the regional board staff, we have told the city that the public and the board needs to see how their plan reacts to sea level rise and how they will create a park that will be resilient through the century and maintain restored wetlands to continue to improve water quality for San Diego residents and wildlife. So what we expect next is that the city will release their final programmatic EIR at the Planning Commission meeting in December. It was supposed to happen in October, but they've pushed it back now 2 months to December. And we will come back hopefully before that with information on it, but at least at that time or after that to let you know what we feel like, what our opinion is on the city's plan that they've put forward.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Mayor?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We know climate change manifests in California, at least as a Mediterranean climate, in terms of water. And we have not just what we're seeing in our precipitation pattern changes, but also seawater. So this definitely needs to be taken into consideration. So thank you for your advocacy there. We have no other public forum? Nobody from Zoom land? Okay, so we'll skip the minutes because we don't have a quorum quite yet, and we'll go into reports. So we have our executive officer's report, and we want to start that with a very happy note of opportunity to recognize two of our employees for outstanding and significant work. So will Kimberly McMurray Cathcart and Sheila Christine McBride Moran join us, or are they remote, or are they actually here? Are they remote? Okay. So Sheila Christine is remote, and is Kimberly with us in person? No, she is not with us. Okay. Well, nevertheless, we wish to honor them remotely or not present. Both are hardworking women. They handle many tasks as part of our Mission Support Services Unit, and which is the unit that ensures a myriad of processes that run smoothly to support all of our programs and many activities that support today's board meeting. So very specifically for Kimberly, Kimberly's being recognized for developing and maintaining an amazing GIS visualization tool, for our Clean Water Act, Section 401 Water Quality Certification Program. This kind of stuff is really important. I particularly appreciate this. Kimberly's recognized that a visualization tool was a big gap in the State Board's existing program management database, CWIX, and she knew that a GIS data existed and that it could help the staff. So she learned how to use the Water Board's tools to create this dynamic visualization tool. Well, thank you very much, Kimberly. And we do have a lovely certificate for her. I'm sure will be presented to her appropriately. And for Sheila, Sheila is being recognized for outstanding effort in the face of incredibly frustrating challenges to procure services and equipment that keep our laboratory functional. And I know from my own personal work, this is often a Herculean activity. In just one example involving some critical equipment, Sheila Christine fought through bureaucracy status quo processes and saved us approximately $11,000. I hope she didn't break any laws by having the equipment repaired instead of replaced. She pursued a more cost-effective and common sense option, even though administrative and procurement roadblocks funneled us towards simply purchasing new equipment. All of us who care about smart and efficient use of state resources in procurement should appreciate the effort and determination of Sheila Christine. And I personally certainly do, and I know everybody else does. And we have also a lovely certificate, which will be presented to her. And Dave, do you have anything else you would like to say?
Yes, both of them are utterly indispensable to the effectiveness of the regional board. Besides the duties that you mentioned, Kimberly McMurray Cathcart also is one of our fee coordinators and has frequently interacted with the public on the fees that they owe for the regulation of their waste discharges, and in some cases have been able to restore their fees. For example, with fireworks displays that were canceled during the pandemic, she was able to work with them to get the fees reversed, so they got their money back. Really an intrepid public servant. And Sheila Christine Moran is also working with me on the Tijuana River issues. She's overseeing an interagency agreement with the San Diego River Conservancy and fills in wherever we can in terms of managing the paperwork flow in and out of our office. Again, utterly indispensable to the effectiveness of the technical programs of the staff. So I join you in congratulating them on their service, and this is a recognition.
Well, I'm happy we have that opportunity to recognize them. We see many people in the Water Board who are, in order to get their job done and looking at the greater mission, work outside their classification, and they do it often on time that is not compensated, and we really appreciate those energies. That's the only way we can keep our mission moving forward. So at this point, we received a report from our State Board liaison. She will not be joining us today. But we do have a report. If our board members have any questions about that report, please give them to Dave and we can follow up on them. And I'll turn it over to our executive officer for his report and field any questions from our staff.
Thank you, Chair Cantu. A couple of things to add besides the awards and the Coastal Commission meeting that I will be attending this afternoon. On the border water issues that we heard about at the last meeting, I do have some good news, although we're still waiting for the delivery. The state agency in Baja has been working on the PB1A pipeline, which conveys wastewater and Tijuana River diversion flows from Tijuana to the coast, where it's discharged on the coast untreated. When they're able to restore that pipeline to service, which we hope it will happen no later than November, they're making rapid progress on it. They will be able to reactivate the river diversion and what is currently crossing the border, about 20 to 30 million gallons per day, essentially of raw sewage, will be intercepted and diverted to the coast. It'll be a problem, but it will be a different problem. And the residents will be able to enjoy their homes without the smell of sewage permeating them throughout the night, which is a grave concern, not only for the irritation, but for the fact that there are many members of the community who are very sensitive to hydrogen sulfide. And when the sun goes down, the hydrogen sulfide is no longer volatilized. The marine layer traps that air close to the surface, and it rapidly moves from the river into people's homes there. So we do expect to hear quite a lot this afternoon from the residents who are fed up with the sewage issues, and well they should be. But the repair of that pipeline will help expedite that issue and also relieve the International Treatment Plant of excess flows coming into it. There's also work ongoing with the International Collector, which is damaged. So another pathway of sewage to the river is through that collector, that sewer line. So it is under repairs right now. And North American Development Bank will be considering additional funding certification for upgrades to the pump station with screening. So that will improve the reliability of that system. There are other repairs that are ongoing today that the commissioner will report to the Coastal Commission. And I will be providing you a regular update in coming weeks as the repairs of the International Boundary and Water Commission proceed and the international repairs are also proceeding. I'll have an update for the public that should be posted this week on our website, which provides some of this information so we can refer people who are calling our office and emailing us, which there are quite a few, to the same information on a timely basis. We also have two total maximum daily loads. The peer reviews have been received. We're revising the documents right now for public release and comment. And we are anticipating having two public workshops on or about November 30th, one in person and then one remotely via Zoom after hours to accommodate the public's input on that. I am working with EPA and IBWC on how to implement those through the USMCA projects. Adopting a plan is one thing, being able to actually turn it around in results is another. And so we'll be talking more about how we go forward with the TMDLs in terms of implementation. I will, of course, be preparing a report for the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting, which meets in a couple of weeks on the 23rd. Our issue that we'll update is the border, of course. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be permitted by the airlines to bring a sample of the Tijuana River with me to Sacramento, as I would otherwise like to do. I think intimacy with the issue will get more results than talking. A picture will, in this case, we'll have to do because Homeland Security won't let me bring it through the airport. All joking aside, this is an issue that has attracted a great deal of attention in Sacramento, and we're focused on getting outcomes and actions, not just verbiage. And so this will be an opportunity to again discuss how we want to address this issue with California and with the federal government. But at the end of the day, it is a federal funding issue at this point. We have the technology, we have the plans, we've done the environmental studies, the permits are waiting. What we need now is money to do these projects. The last thing I wanted to mention is that, unfortunately, we have had an outbreak of Caulerpa prolifera in the Coronado Cays in San Diego Bay. For many years now, you may or may not know, many certifications that I signed for work on bays, estuaries, and lagoons require pre- and post-project surveys for Caulerpa, an invasive algae. And after almost 20 years, we have not had an outbreak. Now, unfortunately, we do. Thanks to those surveys, I hope we have detected it early enough. We are working with the Southern California Caulerpa Action Team, multiple agencies, to identify the extent of the outbreak and eradicate it. We'll be working closely with the Port of San Diego and the City of Coronado on this, and you can expect more reports coming from us as we proceed on this. I understand that Fish and Wildlife will have a couple of fact sheets that will be available in the next week or so, but this is really a very urgent issue to address, because Caulerpa as an invasive algae would rapidly overtake our eelgrass beds and impact our recreational and ecological services that they provide. So we cannot let this get away from us. So we'll be working on this very assiduously, and our staff will make mention of some of the work that we're doing in the Bay during the later item. But we're on top of this, and I'll be providing more reports as we go forward. That concludes my report, unless you have any questions.
Questions for Executive Officer?
It's not a question, just a comment. I wanted to say I appreciated the update on design storms. I know that was an issue that I'd raised a couple meetings ago, and I thank you for the thorough response, and I'm glad to see other agencies are looking at this as well.
Yes, thank you.
Along the lines of the Caulerpa, we've seen outbreaks and that have not been eradicated in other places in the world, and if you let it get out of control, it just can destroy so much. And what we're seeing is with climate change and increased heat within just the state of California, we get these reports of notices of blue-green algae and other contaminants that are plants that grow with increased heat that cause lakes and recreational opportunities to be shut down throughout the state of California. And I've never seen so many as we received this last month. I think we received two a day for several weeks there of major recreational lakes throughout the state of California, some far north that were shut down because of blue-green algae. So we're going to be seeing more and more of that. Our work is not getting less it's getting more and more complicated and more complex. So we will not be taking our action items. We'll save those. And at this point, I'm going to invite our Teamwork Makes Dream Work presentation, Sediment Cleanup in the San Diego Bay. I'm trying to see, did I miss anything that I should have done in advance? Or I guess we need to table things until we can loop back to them. So can the Dream Work people quickly mobilize? I know you were. Oh, we're having, I was wondering what was going on there. Okay, so it sounds like we are having many obstacles in our ability to pull off a smooth moving meeting today. The dream team is definitely ready to go. Oh, I meant to invite you. Yes, this is perfect timing, actually. I meant to invite Board Member Strom to talk about work that he is doing, fascinating work that he's doing on trout. So please do that.
Be happy to. Most of you know I'm a fly fisherman. And for years, I've been going up into the Golden Trout Wilderness twice a year to leading a volunteer team to essentially we put up a barbed wire fence around the center of an alpine meadow, 9,000 feet, very, very pristine, beautiful place. And the fence is designed to keep the cattle out, because even though it's a wilderness area, they've grandfathered in the rights to run cattle up there in the summer, and the cattle, of course, do major damage to a little stream. Then we go back up in the fall and take the fence down so it doesn't affect wildlife during the snowstorm. This year, we didn't have to put the fence up because there was so much rain and water that there was enough grass down below the people that decided not to even take their cows up there. So instead, we built some what are called beaver dam analogs. Where the term analog fits in there, I don't know. But basically, there are artificial beaver dams. We drag out logs and wood from the hillside, put it in the stream, weave branches around there, and the whole idea is to slow down the water flow and raise the level up to where the meadow where feeds out into the meadow, keeps it green. And they seem to be working very well. We went back up a couple of weeks ago, back up in order to kind of monitor our work. We've been doing bioassessments. I did one, I think, 12, 13 years ago. We try to do them every 5 years. We missed a couple of years with COVID. But luckily now I don't have to go up there and do those with volunteers. Our monitoring team here from the board is working on a state project to evaluate reference streams, particularly in Southern California and on intermittent streams. And using this as a reference area, if I'm correct there, Chad. I got to go up with our team of experts. And while they did their bioassessment, I did a little fish survey. Trout are doing just wonderfully. They're fat and healthier than I've ever seen in that stream. And I think the whole meadow is doing very well. So one of the exciting things that's just come on in the last couple of years is we're now able to do eDNA sampling, environmental DNA sampling. So instead of doing a fish survey, which we used to do, go in with electro fishers and shock all the fish and count them and take DNA samples off of them, we can now take a little water sample at the bottom of the meadow, and it tells us basically if you pay for the full-on evaluation, it tells you everything that's living in that stream. Fish, bugs, algae, plants. It's an amazing technology, and we hope to do more of it in more streams up there. So it was really fun for me and enlightening to see our professionals at work. They do an amazing job in freezing cold water and luckily in this case, a beautiful hike in and out, but it's a good project, and I expect to see more and more of the sideline with this native steelhead here in Southern California. We've always, the biggest problem is invasive fish in the local streams like San Mateo Creek. And by taking DNA, eDNA samples now, we can tell where those invasives are and who they are, and get in there and eradicate them. So it's, again, it's new technology that's really helping in our environmental research. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for doing that good work. I have a question on the beaver analog. What's to stop them from having real beavers? I mean, those guys work really hard for free.
That's a good question, and that's certainly under consideration. One of the things you have to do with Fish and Wildlife is show that there were beavers in there naturally. There's one example I can think of where that went wrong is up in Utah. I was fishing, and a whole meadow was just basically turned into a marsh all the way across because they brought in beavers. There were no controls. There were no predators, and they essentially took over the whole meadow and just kind of wiped it out. It was a ton of fish in there, but you couldn't catch them because it was a mass of branches and leaves. So just introducing beavers, unless you do the research to see, you know, is there the natural controls on them? Is it a place where they had naturally worked? One thing in this case, there are very few willows near the stream, so it's questionable that they would be too successful there. But they're looking at it for sure, and there's other meadows where that will be the good solution.
We don't know. You know they're using beavers in the Sierra, lots of places, and they're really good workers.
Yeah, this whole thing, it's Trout Unlimited got like a $50 million grant nationwide, and they're using 7 million of it just in the Sierras, Eastern Sierras, to do things like this. And part of that is researching where they can bring in beavers naturally.
I think that might be the magical touch there. Thank you. I'm sorry. No, that's good. I meant to call you, and I, you know, when things change, they get discombobulated.
Yeah, that's right. And I figured it'd be time later if we did this work.
Thank you. That's good work.
It's fun.
So are we making progress?
Chair Cantu. So staff are currently working on trying to get their presentation up here so that our team, our audience can see the presentation as well as our online members. So if the board can consider just a quick 5-minute break.
Sure.
While we get reorganized here, and then we can get started.
Very good. Thank you for your indulgence and patience. I'm sure the dream team will be well worth the wait. Okay, it sounds like technology is behaving itself, and the dream team looks dreamy, and we're ready to roll.
I think we're about ready to go. Should I start sharing the screen now? Okay, I'm going to start sharing the screen, so you don't have to look at me.
Oh, looking very promising.
Is it showing up? Yep, okay.
It is.
I think we're... All right. Thank you for being patient as we work through some of these issues. All right, good morning. Chair Cantu and members of the board. Sorry you're not all here to witness this great presentation that we have for you. But for those of you who are lucky to be here, I'm very happy for you. Today, we're going to be presenting an update on the implementation of a strategy for a healthy San Diego Bay, specifically on how the strategy has helped the staff from different programs work together more like a team as it relates to sediment cleanups in the Bay. So my name is Wayne Chu, and I'm in the Healthy Waters branch, serving the board as the monitoring and surveillance coordinator. So I'll be providing a brief introduction and background for this item. So, but I just want you to feel free to ask any questions at any time during our presentation, should you want more information or additional clarification. So let's start with why we have the strategy. And it starts with the board's mission, which to paraphrase a little is to protect, enhance, and restore the quality of the waters in the San Diego region for the benefit of present and future generations. So we developed the strategy and the board adopted the strategy in 2015 based on chapter one of our practical vision, which is strategizing for healthy waters, to focus our efforts and resources on what is most important to protect, enhance, and restore the health of the waters in the region. Determining the health of the waters in the region is based on the key beneficial uses. For San Diego Bay, the strategy identifies the key beneficial uses as recreation, fish and shellfish consumption, and habitats and ecosystems. So we've shown the seven steps of the strategy several times during previous updates. And as you may remember, these steps aren't implemented strictly in this linear looking process, but more as an adaptive process. The adaptive process is supposed to be informed based on what we learn from the assessments and the progress being made toward protecting and restoring the key beneficial uses. The assessment and progress tracking is based on data and information that helps us understand the conditions of the bay for the key beneficial uses. So it helps us understand the conditions. We need to understand the conditions for the key beneficial uses, the sources or the stressors that are causing impacts to the conditions, the sources contributing to the stressors, and the performance of the management actions to improve the conditions and reduce impacts from stressors and sources. The strategic water quality assessment approach for San Diego Bay, endorsed by this board last November, lays out the data and information we need and want to adequately conduct these assessments and track progress. However, before the assessment approach was developed, we had to develop our initial priorities and goals and begin realigning our work to try and focus our efforts on what's most important for making progress toward a healthy San Diego Bay. So after the strategy was adopted in 2015, we began implementing the strategy by looking at what data we had already available to assess the key beneficial uses. One of the biggest data sets we had available to us when we first began implementing the strategy was sediment chemistry data. That was collected for multiple board projects and programs since the 1990s. So in 2017, we developed a data and information visualization tool, which we sometimes refer to as a DIVIT, to look at over 20 years worth of sediment chemistry data from all of our different monitoring projects and programs we have in one place for the first time. The DIVIT helped us see and understand sediment chemistry data have been collected all around the bay, often by multiple projects and programs in many of the same areas, but not always shared between the projects and programs. The visualization tool confirmed that we had been working on the right places to clean up contaminated sediments, but also helped us realize we needed a better understanding of how those contaminated sediments are impacting the conditions of the bay, as well as see that there were other areas of the bay where we needed to focus some more of our efforts and resources. In particular, the PCBs and mercury sediment data displayed on the tool helped us see where we should realign our efforts and resources to be more effective at restoring the fish and shellfish consumption key beneficial use of the bay. So today we're going to share with you how we've been realigning our work related to sediment cleanups to focus our efforts to focus on efforts that can improve the bay for the fish and shellfish consumption key beneficial use. Realignment of our work began in 2018 by identifying the programs from our three branches that may be working on in San Diego Bay and need to communicate and coordinate better with each other. Staff were identified from these programs and convened to form the San Diego Bay Programs Coordination Work Group. This work group's been meeting regularly now since 2019 to share what each program is working on in the Bay. So instead of working in program silos, the programs are now communicating and thinking about what they can do to help each other improve the Bay in terms of the key beneficial uses. And not just during the work group meetings, but also whenever they need or want information, support, and assistance. So today you're going to hear from the Site Restoration Unit, the Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit, the Monitoring Assessment and Research Unit, and the Site Restoration Facilities Unit, and what they've been doing in San Diego Bay since the formation of the work group, and how they're being informed, supported, and assisted by each other to realign their work related to sediment cleanups to protect, enhance, and restore San Diego Bay for the fish and shellfish consumption key beneficial use. In addition to the update you'll hear from board staff, we'll also get updates from representatives of the port and the Navy on their activities that contribute to assessing and improving the health of the Bay. So I'll hand it over now to Sarah Mirren, who will kick off the board staff's presentation.
Thank you, Wayne. Good morning, everyone. I'm Sarah Muron, Senior Engineering Geologist in the Site Restoration Unit, aka the Site Cleanup Program. And as Wayne just mentioned, we are part of the San Diego Bay Work Group, along with six other units or programs. And we've been working on this with Wayne at the helm for several years. You may recall about a year ago, I believe it was in August, we had an update for you on San Diego Bay cleanups. So I'm going to start out today giving you an update for over the last year of where we've progressed on that. And then I'm going to touch on how we have been working with the other units that you're going to hear from today on these aspects of cleanups. So this is a refresher of the cleanup sites that we have ongoing currently in the site cleanup program. This is the same slide that you saw last year. So the very top, there's three sites kind of in the northern part of the bay, Toe Basin, Convair Lagoon, and Laurel Hawthorne. And then we have five sites that are grouped together kind of near the Coronado Bridge. And I'll show you a little bit more of a close-up. So these are the top three. In the northern part of the bay, Toe Basin / Lockheed Marine Terminal, and the East Basin of Harbor Island there on the left, and then the Convair Lagoon and Laurel Hawthorne Embayment on the right there, next to the Coast Guard Station. The Laurel Hawthorne project is a little bit more complicated because there's three different responsible parties in three different orders. So there's a lot of coordination going on there. And then the other five, here's just more of a close-up here. So the infamous shipyard sediment site is shown there on the bottom. And that, of course, is in a post-remedial monitoring phase. The site at the top, Campbell Cap, also in post-remedial monitoring. And the three shown in the center, kind of centered on the bridge, are currently in an investigation phase. Also last year, we had a separate presentation. I believe it was in November, where we talked about the sediment quality objectives. And the sediment quality objectives are narrative objectives to determine sediment quality. And they're a part of the sediment quality provisions that were adopted in 2018 by the State Board and EPA. And there's three sediment quality objectives. The aquatic life benthic community objective, which is meant to be protective of the benthos, which are the critters that live on and in the sediment. There's the human health sediment quality objective, which is meant to be protective of human health from ingestion of fish and shellfish, which goes back to the fish and shellfish beneficial use that Wayne was talking about in his introduction. And then the third SQO is the wildlife and resident finfish sediment quality objective, which is meant to be protective of the marine mammals and birds and finfish that ingest other animals that are living in the bay. So then going back to the map of our eight sites that we're currently overseeing, some of these sites are a little bit older and they came about, oversight started before the age of SQOs, and those are shown in yellow. So there's three of those. And then we have five that are we're actively working on right now, either an investigation or a remediation phase, and those are shown in blue. And we presented this graphic also last year during our SQO presentation, just to show you where we're at in terms of the phase of work for these different sites. The bottom three are the pre-SQO sites, and those are kind of status quo. We're still in a post-remedial monitoring phase for those. The top five have all progressed. So I added dates there for to show roughly where we were last year and where we are now. So there has been some progress. These top three sites, those are the ones that are clustered around the bridge. They actually went out in August and September just recently and did their data collection for their SQO investigations. So at this point, there's a lot of data processing going on and we'll be seeing some reports next year. Laurel Hawthorne Embayment, when we spoke to you last year, we had received the reports. We are still in the process of reviewing them and working with the parties on a whole heck of a lot of complications that we're seeing in these data reports. And hopefully we will be able to provide comments shortly and then see what we need to do next. And then finally, there's Toe Basin Lockheed Marine Terminal, which the board approved adoption of a cleanup order last August as well. And under that order, we've had a few submittals that have come in and we've been providing comments and working with the party on that as well. So some progress has been made. And so now I just wanted to just touch on how we've been working with the other units that you're going to hear from today. So one of them is Site Restoration Military Facilities Unit. Basically, the simplest way to describe the difference between our two units is that we work on cleanup that is non-military, and then the military facilities unit obviously works on the military cleanup. So we both work on sediment sites in the bay, and our staff has been working with the staff in the military facilities unit to ensure that we have a consistent approach. They've also been working on with the SQOs, and our staff has been working with those for quite a while. So we've been trying to provide assistance with that for the various cleanup projects that Sean's unit is working on. And in order to have an effective sediment cleanup, we found that the two biggest objectives that we have is to comply with State Water Board Resolution number 9249 and also the sediment quality objectives. And I will explain that, how they work together in these next few slides. So State Board Resolution 9249 mandates that the Water Board has the authority to approve cleanup that is not more stringent than the pre-discharge condition. And then we also need to make sure that the cleanup restores water quality and beneficial uses. So if you look at this diagram here, there's the pre-discharge condition arrow in blue on the left. We can't go any more stringent than that. And then we do need to make sure beneficial uses are protected, which is represented by the red arrow on the right. So the cleanup range in terms of chemical concentrations is represented with the yellow arrow that's in between those two lines. But then, as I mentioned, we also have to work in the sediment quality objectives. So when those two items are put together, basically the three sediment quality objectives that I talked about earlier need to also fit in into that cleanup range. And this is how these two aspects of an effective cleanup work together. And I've highlighted the human health SQO here because that is the focus, as Wayne mentioned earlier, because this relates back to the fish and shellfish consumption beneficial use. And we have been working with the Monitoring Assessment and Research Unit, also known as MARU, who you're also going to hear from today. They provide our unit with some really excellent guidance in terms of the biology and the ecology and statistics, which is not necessarily a background that a bunch of geologists and engineers have in our group. It's been very helpful. And they've been helping us with interpreting how to apply the SQOs, how to do some of the sediment sampling within eelgrass areas and that sort of thing. Oops. I don't know what I did there. If I go back to this. The minimize. Sorry. Oops. Okay. So with reference to the human health sediment quality objective, this is just a schematic of a food chain that is representative of what we see in San Diego Bay. So outlined in red at the bottom, you have the benthic community, which provides food for plenty of other categories of critters that live in and around the bay. Those outlined in blue are what contribute to the human health pathway. And so looking at the human health SQO is extremely important for determining how the impacts in the sediment and the water is impacting the different trophic levels and possibly moving up the food chain and leading to bioaccumulation and biomagnification, which could potentially lead to impacts to human health. Finally, I did want to touch on how we've been working with the Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit, who is also here today to speak to you. So I'm bringing back the map that Wayne showed you earlier. And you can see that there's a lot of different areas with a lot of different colors. We've got a lot of sediment data in various areas of the bay. And the Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit receives applications for water quality certifications for dredge and fill projects. And there is the strong possibility that some of those projects are going to intersect with our contaminated sites. So we have been working with Eric's unit to develop a process for basically pre-screening these areas to determine if there could possibly be an impact with dredge and fill and other types of in-water work in areas that intersect. And so we've called these areas of known contamination, or AKC. We've also been invited to attend pre-application meetings with applicants who would be working in these areas so that we can hear about what type of work they're going to be doing and what sort of disturbance they might have in these areas. And then we've been also working with them to develop standardized best management practices, or BMPs, for dredging, pile removal, and pile installation activities. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Eric. Yep. Yep. Go ahead.
I have two questions, Eric Anderson. One was, how's the cooperation factor going with all these different folks?
What, internally?
No. The SQO folks.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, okay. You don't have to answer it. Okay, my second one. We'll let Dave talk to me about that later and lecture me about asking loaded questions.
I will say that, I mean, we're trying to be consistent. And so that's why we work with Sean's group. And then within our group, we have lots of meetings because I have three different case managers who are working on these sediment sites. And we make sure that we're all doing the same thing so that nobody can dispute.
Well, and what I was asking was in the context that the sediment, the original sediment cleanup that cost $50 million and is done, it was like herding cats, and it took us like 20 years to get them in the room. And And yeah. Actually, I got to talk to my friend Dave King, the guy who heard of the cats and got it done. Are they willing to move forward, or, are you just talking to attorneys these days?
There are a lot of attorneys.
I recognize hot potato. Could you address the complications a little bit? I was kind of puzzled by what complications mean.
Complications?
Yeah, you said there were some complications that were,
data?
With the data.
Oh, I know that on some of the projects, there's been some questions about some of the toxicity tests. It's a really technical issue that we've been trying to fix. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe Eric's presentation might shed some light.
Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. My name is Eric Becker. I am a senior water resource control engineer with your Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit. And we regulate a lot of activities within San Diego Bay that have potential impact sediment quality. Move on here. These include dredging, pier and dock replacement and removal, shoreline improvements, and lesser degree sand replenishment. So we issue 401 certifications and waste discharge requirements to these type of projects, and they apply equally both to private and military facilities within the bay. So we've had really good coordination and successful coordination with the site restoration units on cleanup of contaminated areas. So we've been able to standardize a set of minimum requirements and best management practices that we include in our 401 certifications. So I'll kind of go over a little bit of those. Start with the standard minimum best management practices, or BMPs. They're used to minimize resuspension of sediment and contain the sediment into the dredge area that they're working in. First, they start out with an environmental dredge bucket that seals and doesn't cause them like a mess like a traditional dredging bucket does. All the barges have to be sealed. Not only the barges that they're doing the dredge work, but the barges that take the dredge material back to the shore need to be sealed, so to prevent spillage. And they need to implement sediment containment like the silt curtain, which you can see in the picture here. This is a former Navy Training Center boat channel cleanup project in 2018. It's North San Diego Bay between Liberty Station and Airport in the channel. That helps. They also have to implement BMPs on the land storage side, because they're going to have to dewater this dredge material before they haul it out to a landfill, most likely. So we also have standard requirements for monitoring and sampling. This is a example monitoring setup here for the same project I showed in this last picture. You have to have a series of monitoring sampling points. They do a combination of visual and monitoring for turbidity, DO, and pH. They can also sample for constituents of concern if needed for the project. And sampling is required for these type of projects, both on the characterization of the dredge material, so they need to figure out where they're going to send it, and also once they do the cleanup is to go ahead and actually do confirmation sampling in the area that they dredged. We also have standard requirements for eelgrass surveys. Pre-project eelgrass surveys are required, and eelgrass beds are important to the ecosystem of the bay, as they are habitat for and provide beneficial uses to shelter and or for food for fish, birds, turtles, and invertebrates. And like my staff likes to remind me, it's a critical habitat for green sea turtles, a threatened species. So if they do identify eelgrass beds in the area, they have to implement BMPs to protect those. They have to do a project survey of that bank and see if there is any impact. So if there are any planned or unplanned impacts to the eelgrass beds, then they have to mitigate for those losses. And as Dave mentioned earlier, there's a pre-construction survey required for CLRPA, and just what we've been dealing here in the last couple of weeks just demonstrates how necessary and effective these CLRPA surveys are, and why we have them included in all our 401 certifications for the Bay. So most of the projects are not or being above contaminated areas. They're all types of different projects like the ones I listed earlier in the presentation. This is an example. This is Portside Pier. If you're familiar with it, it's right next to Sandy. It's northeast part of San Diego Bay. Used to be the Anthony's. So they removed all the piling and put new piling and new dock work. So really to have limited information on that. So in the past, projects like this really haven't had a whole lot of requirements on them, or just basic requirements, you know, minimum BMPs, maybe a single silt curtain around the area that they're working in, and really relying on visual monitoring. And as Sarah mentioned earlier, we're coordinating with our group. Maybe we can do better on these projects, or take a closer look on whether is there sediment quality issues within the project boundary. So, like she mentioned, we're trying to identify these earlier in the process and have the applicants look in these areas of known contamination and flag it for us, so we can pull in the right people to take a look. We also want my staff to start using the sediment quality that we do have. I know we don't have it everywhere, but at least try to use the information they have in San Diego Bay to guide what they're going to require as far as for best management practice for the project and the monitoring. That can include some by confirmation sampling if it's really necessary. They're also working with us to establish minimum or just like language in our permits that we can include in the 401 that'll address all these potential issues. All right, we're also working a similar coordination with Sean's site restoration unit for military facilities like this one. This is just the Naval Base San Diego, where they're doing some dredge material offloading. So it just shows some BMPs. We've been able to memorize all the standard requirements for at least for dredging in contaminated areas. So the Navy and the water boards signed a memorandum of agreement establishing what are the minimum BMPs or operating and monitoring that are going to be for those sites. So that way it cuts out all the back and forth during the permitting process, so we don't have to argue. Not that we would, but sometimes we have disagreement on what is appropriate best management practice. So this cuts out that guesswork, should facilitate their permitting process, and hopefully it'll be effective. We haven't had a whole lot of dredge projects recently, but we hope to apply the MOA to those projects when they come in. And lastly, and then I'll transition to Sean, and he can talk about it, but we do need more coordination on all the other activities that the Navy does, because like all those, they do pier and pile replacement also, and we don't necessarily have the same information on contaminated areas. So our plan is to do future coordination with Sean's group, and so we can apply the adequate BMPs and measures on those projects.
Yeah, just a quick question about the Navy. When you have two agencies doing kind of side by side same thing, sometimes it goes better and sometimes it goes worse. Are we doing better or is it worse?
No, I think we're doing better. Yeah, I mean, it's like in the previous, we would argue a lot about what's the appropriate BMPs. The silt curtain seems to be, you know, do you need two and one? Or that seems to be the major bone of contention. And I think now that we have something in black and white, I think it'll cut down on the. And we hope to apply those lessons to other projects too. Any other questions? All right.
Good morning, Chair Cantu and members of the board. My name is Sean McLean. I'm the Senior Engineering Geologist and Program Manager for the Site Restoration Military Facilities Unit. Great to be here today and part of the dream team that's working in the Bay. Today, I'm going to go over some of the coordination between my program and the other water board programs working in the Bay. And I'm really excited to bring up two priority projects that we've been working on this year with the Navy, which is the Naval Base San Diego sediment investigation and also the IR Site 9 benthic study. Just a little bit of background before I get started. The Navy is one of the key stakeholders in the Bay with its three primary military installations in the Bay: Naval Base Point Loma, North Island Naval Air Station, and Naval Base San Diego. And all of these bases provide different roles and functions for the military and for their mission. Naval Base San Diego is the second largest surface ship base of the Navy, consisting of over 50 ships and 13 piers in the Bay. Naval Air Station North Island is part of the largest aerospace industrial complex of the Navy and is home port to several aircraft carriers. And Naval Base Point Loma consists of the submarine base, Naval Mine and Anti-Submarine Warfare Command, and the Fleet Combat Training Center. My program provides regulatory support to the Navy on all of its investigations and remediation of its cleanup sites within these bases. This is the regulatory process that the military follows. CERCLA is a very structured process from the initial identification of a contaminated area interest all the way through the remedial action and long-term monitoring of a site. And sometimes this includes long-term monitoring. I'm sorry. This is all done to protect human health and the environment. This is actually one of my program's first collaborative efforts in the office. We hold briefings with executive management to let them know, usually around the feasibility study time, what decisions are going to go into that study and what could the final plan be in the record of decision. So that way, when the record of decision does come to our executive officer, he's aware of what decisions have been made on that project. For the Bay, my program does have overlap with almost all the other programs working in it. As Eric Becker mentioned, our units did develop a memorandum of agreement with the Navy, which helped streamline the process of the military dredging projects in contaminated areas. We also coordinate with MARU when we need to evaluate the data collected in the Bay near the base areas, or how to incorporate the sediment quality objective criteria at cleanup sites that need to evaluate risk to the beneficial uses of the Bay. As Sarah mentioned, we do participate in the San Diego Bay work groups to discuss these projects and ensure that our programs are consistent in applying regulatory standards and policies in the Bay. And there is also some coordination with the stormwater units, which have permits on the military bases. This is the first project update I want to talk about, which is the Naval Base San Diego sediment investigation. This base is located just south of the Coronado Bridge and just south of the shipyards areas. One of our priorities this year has been working with the Navy to complete a sediment investigation where all of the ships and the piers are located, and to evaluate the historical discharges of contaminants that have occurred from this base out into the bay. A few years ago, when Wayne showed us this GIS sediment map, it became clear where the investigations and cleanups would be needed and areas that didn't need to be looked at further. While the Water Board has focused more on the shipyards areas and the other projects to the north, it was clear that Naval Base San Diego, shown here, would also have to investigate the sediment contamination in the bay. These are map view figures of the base. The left image shows the location of the open and closed sites that are located on Naval Base San Diego. And the right image shows the historical dredging footprints, which are shown in purple, and also the planned dredging footprints shown in green. And the little dots are showing you where the historical sediment data was collected near this base. Now, the Navy is currently collecting new sediment data and will compare it to the historical data for a comprehensive site investigation and to determine whether releases of CERCLA-regulated chemicals occurred from any of these Navy cleanup sites. We are looking forward to reviewing this data to see what decisions will need to be made to address sediment concerns at this base and to ensure that any of the historical discharges from these cleanup sites, to make sure that they're no longer discharging to the bay. Moving over to the IR Site 9, located at Naval Air Station North Island, also known as the Fiery Marsh, which is a terrible name for a site, but it did used to spontaneously combust, so the name is fitting. Site 9 operated as a chemical waste disposal area from the late 1940s through the mid-1970s. It's been estimated up to 32 million gallons of waste were disposed of in various areas at Site 9. Investigations have indicated that groundwater contamination migrated from the source areas and has been discharging into San Diego Bay. This is a closer look at the issue. The figure on the right shows the extent of the groundwater contamination shown in those green contours. And where it shows where it is discharging into the bay near the ammo pier. And that data was collected from pore water sampling that was collected down in the sediments. Oops. Now, this discharge is different than a sediment contamination site. These are dissolved phase chemicals in the groundwater that volatilize, they dilute, they degrade as they migrate through the sediments. So there's a lot that we don't understand from this kind of a discharge and what effects it might have on the benthic community. The figure on the left shows the benthic sampling locations that were recently collected in September within the discharge area and outside of it. And the purpose of this study is to evaluate the benthic community and environmental conditions present in the benthic zones where the discharge is occurring using the sediment quality objectives criteria. And part of what we're really trying to understand is if the chemicals in the groundwater are impacting the beneficial uses of the bay. This all starts with the benthic community because, as Sarah showed you in her slides, the benthic community is the basis of the food web for the bay. So once the Navy has this data, we can start making real decisions on how to address this discharge if needed. And I think this project is really a great example of collaboration between all of our programs in the office and with the Navy to get this work done. And I need to thank everybody that was involved. Wayne Chu from Healthy Waters Branch, Chad Laughlin helped out from MARU, Sherry Chameleon in my unit, and also our branch chief, Roger Mitchell. We all have different backgrounds, but when we came together to really talk about this issue, we were able to give quick responses and good guidance to the Navy on how to proceed with a project like this. I'd also like to thank the Navy staff, Allison Cantu, who's here in the office today, and Brian Gordon for putting their team together to meet with us monthly and to discuss the problems and the issues, to come to a quick resolution on the study that would be needed to be done. What we accomplished in the last 6 months far exceeded the last 20 years on this project. The Navy was collecting data, but it just was never answering the question of the risk and threats to the bay. So we accomplished quite a bit in the last 6 months. With that, are there any questions for me?
Just to clarify, that 92-49 state policy, it sounded a lot like anti-degradation. Oh, no, anti-backsliding, I'm sorry. Is that what it was? Or is it different?
Board Member Anderson, I believe it is quite different. Order 9249 sets obligations upon the state and regional board to negotiate on the basis of financial ability and technical ability. So it's a negotiated outcome in terms of site cleanups. Where we now have a new component is with sediment quality objectives that the state board has now adopted, which give us definable targets to reach. 9249 is still in force, and so it is still a part of our discussion and negotiations. To your question earlier today about how things are going, it's an ongoing debate with each cleanup site. Against all of that is the context of the bay as a whole. And do we treat each site as a universe unto itself and have one set of negotiated standards site by site, or do we do so in the context of a whole bay? Because the entire bay, for example, is listed as impaired for PCBs. It is really a complex regulatory environment, but sediment quality objectives are our driving force right now to be attained throughout the bay.
I think that's it.
Questions. All right. Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Good morning, Chair, members of the board. My name is Chad Laughlin. I'm a senior environmental scientist, and I oversee MARU, which is our monitoring, assessment, and research unit. And so we are, as you've already heard, I don't think I need to explain anymore, we've been helping out with quite a few of the units on assessing key beneficial uses and key areas in the bay. And so specifically today, I'm going to give some updates on some of the work that MARU is doing in San Diego Bay that is not like directly related to the cleanup actions that you've heard we've been helping out today, but is more indirectly related to sediment contamination. So I have three specific projects I'm going to touch on. that are in progress in San Diego Bay in various phases that we feel are important to answering those key beneficial use questions. So first, I'm going to start out with the Swamp Bioaccumulation Realignment Project. So Swamp is, as many of you know, the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Unit, and they do monitoring of ambient water bodies throughout the state. One of the programs within Swamp is a statewide bioaccumulation program. And that program monitors across the state, across the state in rivers, streams, estuaries, bays, the ocean. And it's really intended to answer the safe to eat question like we have in San Diego Bay, but on a statewide basis. And it's supposed to be for fish and shellfish and also for sport fishing, tribal and subsistence use. However, Swamp's funding levels initially were not enough to answer that question. And we also have a problem in that Swamp has not had a fund increase since 2006. So it's 2023 and we are working with $2,006, unfortunately. So right now the statewide program only samples fish and only sport caught fish. And of those sport caught fish, it's a limited number of species that are relatively consistent statewide, so you can make statewide comparisons. Swamp is well aware of this problem. So on a statewide basis, they're trying to do the best they can. And so we're doing something called realignment. And it's really trying to focus on tribal and subsistence use and actually assessing that. But there isn't enough money, obviously. So it's basically started by rotating monitoring by region and trying to allocate some chunk of money on a regional basis to basically try to answer these questions. And so region 9, I was like, let's pick me, let's do region 9 first. So region 9 was picked to go first on this. And I should mention that while this wasn't the purpose of the study and doing this realignment, we expect that, you know, some of the work out of this should support the new beneficial uses for tribal and subsistence. So what did realignment entail? Well, we and by we, I mean State Board and there's their private, what do you call it, contractor that basically coordinates everything, reached out and engaged interested tribes and community groups throughout the region. And those who were interested were invited to participate and were paid for participation. And we developed a collaborative sampling plan across the region. And basically we asked the question, you know, basically said, tell us which sites that you want to monitor, want to have monitored, which species, and then how do you want us to analyze them? Fillet, skin on, whole body, et cetera. So the great news is we had participation and a lot of sites and species were identified. The bad news is we only had enough funding to do 10 sites of those picked. So naturally you would probably expect San Diego Bay was one of the sites. So San Diego Bay was sampled for a variety of species. Sampling wrapped up for the project back in spring of this year. And we ended up collecting 58 species on a region-wide basis. And Region 9 did participate in doing some of that sample collection. And I should mention that while the sampling was conducted and finished up in spring, we're still waiting the results from that. So results can take some time to come in. We are just now receiving mercury and selenium results, but the organic stuff we're still waiting on. So that includes things like PFOS and PFO are monitored, PCBs, organochlorines, et cetera. And so once that data is collected, then we're going to be sharing it with the groups that participated, and they're free to use it in whatever manner they want to. And we're going to talk about how they want to disseminate that information. So the second project I want to touch on is Swamp Regional Eelgrass Monitoring. So you heard from Eric about the importance of eelgrass. You also heard from Dave a little earlier on Calerpa and how that can impact eelgrass. We know that eelgrass is a critically important habitat. It's protected by NOAA and NMFS. It's covered by the state SQOs, although it's a bit challenging to implement within the SQOs. Unfortunately, it's been specifically avoided due to its sensitivity as a habitat for most sampling efforts per pollution assessment. And the other problem we have is it's not regularly mapped across our region. San Diego Bay is one of the exceptions for that, which I'll talk about in a second. So Region 9 basically identified these shortcomings with feedback from some of our partner units. And we put a bunch of our swamp regional funds towards developing a regional monitoring program for eelgrass. And this involved a first step of, well, where is the eelgrass in the region?
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, most of the other enclosed bays and estuaries had never been mapped or had been mapped, but the data was really old, maybe 10 years old, maybe 15 years old, something like that. Or there were very specific portions that were mapped and the whole wasn't mapped. That mapping is done. So we now have eelgrass maps of the entire region for all our enclosed bays and estuaries. And so, great, we have maps. Well, how do we assess those? Traditionally, eelgrass has just been assessed by thinking, well, is it there? And how big is it? The bed. Okay, great. That's it. So really, we wanted to go beyond that and actually do bioassessment, kind of like we do for streams, and develop methods to assess the eelgrass to know, is the biological integrity protected per the Clean Water Act? So we've been putting funding towards actually developing bioassessment methods to assess eelgrass beds. So like I said, San Diego Bay is already regularly mapped. I believe it's every, is it 3 years that the Port of San Diego and the Navy does a extensive mapping effort for San Diego Bay. So you see a figure here of the 2020 inventory. And now we have draft bioassessment SOPs or standard operating procedures that have been drafted using those swamp funds, working with SCWRP, Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, and also a technical advisory group that included a bunch of local universities such as San Diego State, Cal State Fullerton, and we funded 2024 sampling efforts as part of BITE. And so we're working with entities such as the port, and we expect we hopefully can have some test sites in San Diego Bay to use. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that we're working on occupancy modeling of our region's waters, but it's also across the BITE. So, you know, we've mapped eelgrass and said, oh, it's here, but we want to know, well, where should it be if it's, are there areas where it should be and it's not? And then also for future climate change scenarios, what's going to happen if we have sea level rise? Are we going to lose eelgrass beds? Are there areas where we could do some work to protect them or encourage more to be grown? That kind of stuff. And that is currently under tentative grant funding with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yeah.
So that eelgrass out there, the Port of San Diego says, It's the equivalent of 37,000 cars, some number of metric tons that makes my head explode.
Oh, for the blue carbon work. Right? Yeah. No, it's great. Our work is great. So, yeah. So we want to encourage it. So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about today is the BITE and RHMP data evaluation work. BITE is a regional monitoring program that happens across all of Southern California BITE, and it involves regulated parties, and it involves regulators, also other agencies like CDFW, NOAA, and NIMS. The BITE occurs, and the Regional Harbor Monitoring Plan, which includes San Diego Bay, is part of BITE, and they sample on a five-year schedule. So 2023, we are on BITE cycle, so that sampling is happening now. Actually, most of it has already occurred, and Region 9 is participating in that sampling. We're actually going to be working with the port on doing some additional oyster sampling in San Diego Bay. It's great. So the BITE program includes sediment quality objective sampling within San Diego Bay. And this is a map of a sample draw for BITE for San Diego Bay. And this sampling meets multiple permit requirements. Permittees are encouraged to participate in BITE to basically offset some of their sampling and provide a better context bite-wide and also within various bays and estuaries of what conditions look like. And this helps inform multiple programs and track changes over time. And so MARU is planning to use BITE and RHMP data to do some of our evaluation work. So as a board, you're well familiar with the Clean Water Act's 305B and 303D integrated report. And so our plan is to start assessing sediment quality objectives as part of the integrated report. And this is important twofold. Everybody focuses on 303D, which is the identification of impaired areas, which is important. But you've seen from the maps from Wayne We know where a lot of the contaminated areas are. One of the things we think is important is to identify portions of San Diego Bay that are in good condition, where SQOs are being met, that we want to protect. And along those lines, we're also looking at ambient pollutant concentrations bay-wide. And so we get a lot of questions from members of the public, you know, some of the other units, like when they're doing dredging, you know, what do pollutant levels look like outside of known contaminated areas? So if we have areas of the bay where we know aren't in within those contaminated zones, we have a lot of data from BITE and the RHMP. So we're using that data to assess what the pollutant concentrations look like in these, I'll call them lower impact portions of San Diego Bay. And that's important because, you know, you hear a lot about all the contaminated areas and the pollutant concentrations. This helps provide context for that. It also helps with future modeling efforts in the bay. So those are really the main projects I'm updating you on today. I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions?
I had three, but I've forgotten one. I'm hoping the first one is with the regional monitoring that you're doing. How is it once every 9 years? Like, how often will Region 9 come up, if you will?
Oh, for the realignment work for the tribal subsistence.
Well, I'm sorry, and I didn't want to interrupt. But at one point, you talked about how there's just not enough money to go around, and so they're going region by region. How often will it be our region?
That's a good question. So I think it's gonna depend on a couple of factors. One, if other regional boards are interested in doing this, and if not, then maybe we can jump the line a little bit, which would be great. And then we're also, you know, working in the background to try to increase the swamp allocations because they haven't been increased since 2006. So if we can get an increase in that, we can try to focus using our own regional funds on doing more of that work.
Wouldn't that be a good subject at the WQCC?
That I would agree.
And then I think the efforts to unsilo this work is fantastic and should, you know, to the extent replicable is great. My question is, though, in doing this work, have you seen efficiencies arise for our regulated parties? And have there been any cost savings in terms of their testing and monitoring? Because it occurs to me, as you're showing on the sites, there looks like from the entry now, there's a lot of duplication potentially. And I think my reflection in all the years on the board is staff really does try to be aware of the monetary burdens that we're imposing on parties when we sign off on these permits, but it seems like maybe cost savings could be one of the unintended benefits of the work that you're doing. And have you seen that yet?
That's a good question. So I want to hear from Sarah and Sean, but I think that when we're all working together, then we understand where monitoring is occurring across different sites and locations, so that can increase efficiencies. And then we also can allow for, you know, things like if contaminated sites are close together, potentially sharing monitoring duties, things like that. And then also the SQOs have some level of kind of gray areas about, you know, what a lot of there's like minimum requirements and some questions about, you know, what additional things should be done. And so by coordinating, then we're collecting the same level of information across all of the contaminated areas and even non-contaminated areas.
Yeah, I think if it hasn't been something that's been explicitly acknowledged within your group, maybe that is something that you can think about. Just because I think we get hammered for monetary burdens that we impose on regulated parties, and if we can show that we're doing work, in fact, that can decrease that without, you know, compromising the work that needs to be done in the bay, that should be noted and applauded.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fiery marsh that Sean talked about is a good example where, you know, you can monitor all kinds of different chemicals at different depths and whatnot, and that has been done to a certain extent, but the benthos was never monitored. So monitoring the benthos is really going to give you the answer. You know, if they go out and monitor the benthic community and everything comes back and it looks great, then great, right? There's no problem. So that's kind of what we're trying to get at.
Sure. Okay. Any potential for environmental DNA use in the bay, or is too much water?
Yes. So we're kind of testing out the use of eDNA in the eelgrass beds. You know, they're sensitive habitats. We want to minimize disturbance to the extent we can. So what can we monitor in the eelgrass beds to show their condition? benthic infauna is one, but that requires taking a sample. But doing eDNA potentially within the eelgrass bed can show you what organisms are there.
Hey, Gary, thank you so much. You reminded me of my third question.
Yes, a lot of filtering.
You mentioned that we haven't done that historically not all eelgrass beds have been mapped, but to the extent we have the data, have you looked back and, you know, how are you doing? Is it a good story, a bad story? Does it depend on where you're looking?
So I think San Diego Bay is a good story. There's been an increase. You know, there's been a lot of stuff that's happened where eelgrass beds have recovered. So the South Bay power plant went offline and the area of the discharge, basically eelgrass popped up because that warm water, that hot water, I should say, discharge stopped. Unfortunately for the other enclosed bays and estuaries, we really don't have the baseline because some of them had never really been monitored before, or they were just monitored for little site-specific dredging projects.
Go ahead.
You mentioned you were getting the mercury data. Can you make any comment about that?
My comment is it is in and I haven't looked at it yet. It's in my inbox. It's in the cloud.
Well, thank you, Dream Team. This kind of cooperation is really hard to do. You have different languages, different units of measurement, and the lift to do that kind of communication is often time-consuming and laborious. But the product that comes out of it is superior. And it's superior, as you noted, for the regulated community, but it's also superior in how it informs us. So it's definitely worth it. So I applaud you to take that extra effort that you've demonstrated to learn each other's languages and to take down your boundaries and learn how to cooperate and collaborate together to be, in fact, a dream team. That's good work. And I think that's going to be the hallmark of the 21st century, where we all will operate with less money and, you know, tremendous, overwhelming problems, very wicked problems, that the only way we're going to be able to get them is through this collaborative approach where everybody brings an element of the solution. And that lift is heavy, and we're going to have to learn how to do it over and over again. So thank you and congratulations.
Turn it back over to Wayne for...
I have one last comment. Go ahead. Follow up. I'm sorry, that was a great speech, and I hate to step on it and fall. And I can't follow it up very well. But I am curious that how many other areas are developing these BMPs, like Washington or Chesapeake Bay, or... Are we the leader in the nation, or are we way behind?
Like in terms of sediment cleanups? Yes.
Ocean sediment, not land.
Not landside. No. Sarah?
If you don't want to address it, it's okay.
Well, I know the state of Washington is really far along in that. We actually had a member of our unit a few years ago who had come from state of Washington who... gave us a lot of information about that. They have like a really long guidance manual for this called SCUM. The SC is sediment cleanup, but I don't remember what the acronym, but easy to remember that name. So we have been looking at that just when we get into sticky situations. And I'm not, I would say mostly the state of Washington at this point.
Are you aware of anything going on in the Chesapeake Bay and the probably East Coast? And the reason the Chesapeake Bay came up was last meeting we got hammered by a guy who came over from over there. And you could kind of tell that he's used to litigating and not cooperating. Mm. And he hasn't been introduced to the San Diego culture of cooperating and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. We did have a presentation a few years ago from a really excellent case study for some cleanup in Chesapeake Bay, but I would have to look into that a little bit more and what they're doing over there.
If you know the current state of it, if there's a study, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Board Member Anderson. The acronym is Sediment Cleanup User's Manual. And arguably, dealing with PCBs, Washington is on the cutting edge, if only because they've received so much industrial discharges to their waters that they have to remediate now. And with respect to the comments that were made at the last board meeting, the effluent limitation for PCBs at the IBWC treatment plant is pretty darn close to zero. And so, yes, we do see PCBs there. They are not, however, among the highest in the state in terms of municipal wastewater. That honor is up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where they've adopted TMDLs for PCBs in wastewater discharges. Just the last thing to add to that, winning cases in court doesn't mean sediments get cleaned up. And so there have been cases in New York and the Hudson River and in Chesapeake Bay where cleanups have been ordered, courts have issued findings, but the cleanups have not proceeded and matched it. Where I think we have been successful is we have matched where legal challenges have been necessary. We've been able to prevail, and we've worked very effectively with the Port of San Diego, for example, in litigation against Monsanto, the manufacturer of PCBs. And so we have prevailed in cleanups in terms of getting sediments cleaned up. We now have the metric of sediment quality objectives to make them work effectively. And our goal is the environmental protection and sensitive ecosystems and the fish and shellfish consumption, rather than simply winning in court and getting attorney's fees. So with that editorial statement, I'll turn it back over to Wayne and emphasize that with our practical vision, with our strategy for a healthy San Diego Bay, we're focused on the attaining outcomes in real time that we'll live to see.
And since you mentioned Monsanto, do I have to disclose I own stock in Monsanto?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just thank God.
We address that in your Form 700s every year.
Okay, we need to get back on track. So wait.
I just want to say thanks, Dave. I was hoping somebody would bring all of that up, so I don't have to. So I'm going to invite the port to come up and provide an update on their activities in the Bay now. So I'll invite Aaron Holman.
Thank you. We have Karen Holman, Kelly Tate, and Eileen Mayer. Welcome.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Cantu, members of the board. My name is Karen Holman. Today, I'm Director of Environmental Protection. Today, I'm here with Kelly Tate, Program Manager, and Eileen Maher, Director of Environmental Conservation, all with the port. So first off, I wanted to thank Mr. Gibson, Sarah, and your staff for inviting the port to once again be a part of the San Diego Bay update. We agree that teamwork certainly does make the dream work, and we appreciate that the partnership that's grown both at a staff level and an executive level within our agencies. It's helped us to address some of the Bay's many challenging initiatives. And I will say, to your staff's point, the fact that everything is aligning and there a lot of communication, we've had that success happen on many projects with the port. So we appreciate those efforts of your team. Collectively, we're improving the health of the Bay and its marine communities. And many of our environmental projects have come a long way since we were last here, and we wanted to take a few minutes to share that story. San Diego Bay is one of the region's most precious resources. It's an important fish nursery, a place to recreate on the beaches and in the water, a serene natural location for viewing birds and wildlife. And it's also it's also a thriving seaport and lifeline to goods movement throughout the region. Ensuring long-term sustainability means looking at the environment holistically, as you all well know. This is the alignment that you share with your practical vision and your united monitoring and assessment approach. Air, land, water, and wildlife, they're all interconnected. And that means we need to manage all of these resources together and effectively. The port employs a variety of programs to look at ways to reduce pollution, restore our water and landside properties, and creating resiliency to sea level and climate impacts, all ensuring the long-term sustainability of the Bay's resources. The Port of San Diego is a public agency that was established in 1962 by an act of the California State Legislature. The purpose of forming the port was to consolidate management responsibilities and provide centralized planning for the tidelands along the Bay. As you can see on this map, our jurisdiction includes 34 miles of waterfront along the Bay. It includes areas within Chula Vista, Coronado, Imperial Beach, National City, and San Diego. The port manages approximately 2,400 acres of land and almost 12,000 acres of submerged tidelands. Those areas in dark blue on the map in the middle of the bay, it's approximately 8,300 acres of newly acquired submerged lands. These lands were granted from State Lands Commission to the Port of San Diego in 2020 under Senate Bill 507. We're underway in developing a trust land use plan to develop and identify the goals and policies that will designate allowable uses and activities within these newly acquired areas. As grantee of these trust lands, the port's obligations are to promote and ensure the viability of water-dependent uses, including maritime commerce, navigation, fishing, recreation, environmental stewardship, and public safety. As a trust agency, we serve to support the public and our stakeholders by balancing the many roles that you see on this slide. We serve as a landlord and operator for the port and tenant development. We serve as a regulator for environmental compliance and coastal permitting, and an environmental champion, building valuable partnerships, engaging with the community, and actively conducting restoration and cleanup efforts throughout the bay. And with that, I'll turn it to Kelly to talk about some of our programs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. For the record, my name is Kelly Tate with the Port of San Diego. Good morning, Chair Cantu, board members. As Karen said, we have many hats that we wear at the port, and all of the programs in place are done via policy that is created using community engagement to shape those efforts. On this slide, you see many, but not all, of those documents that guide most of our planning. A couple to point out, we have our port master plan. We have our trust lands use plan that is in draft to accommodate those extra tidelands that were granted to us recently, as Karen had talked about. We have our jurisdictional runoff management plan that goes in line with our water quality improvement plans with you guys. We also have things like our integrated natural resource management plan that's part Navy, and Eileen will talk a little bit more about during her portion of the presentation. But one thing we're really proud about, not only is the community engagement that shapes the planning process, but we're also putting policy into action, and we consistently monitor and measure our progress to our policies as well as our successes. On here, we have just a couple of the documents that we put out to share the highlights of those various programs. We have actually given to your executive officer packets with some of those printouts that you see. And to the public listening, all of these reports are available on our website to access as well. Karen said we wear a lot of hats at the port. And I want to focus now on those hats we wear as environmental stewards. Like you, we have a goal of the health of San Diego Bay. And within environmental programs, we have several different facets. Some focus on pollution reduction, some focus on managing resources, and some form a nexus of both. Right now, I want to share updates on some of our pollution reduction programs. The first thing I'm going to jump into, we actually had a great introduction from Chad earlier, is the Regional Harbor Monitoring Program. This is a collaborative program with the Greater Bight Regional Monitoring Program that is led by SCORP. And one of the things about the RHMP that we're really proud of is it provides us the most largest and robust data set for the Bay. We've been collecting data that looks at sediment water quality, toxicity, benthic and fauna, as well as those demersal microbenthos, so the fish and the big critters that live on the bottom, since 2008, and we repeat the sampling every 5 years. Not only do we have the robust data set for the Bay, but we also provide Bight with about a quarter of their data set every round that we sample. The RHMP, we collaborate very closely with the City of San Diego, with the County of Orange, and the City of Oceanside. And greater with Bight participation, we coordinate with over 40 entities, as Chad had touched upon, the regulated and regulated communities that all participate. We just completed sampling for 2023 from August to September, and pictures on the bottom show a lot of those efforts. And I just would like to note, while we do sample and collect a lot of critters, all of these critters are released back pretty immediately with very minimal loss. So we revalue, we tabulate, and we return them to their home. Next up, the work that we've done at 10th Avenue Marine Terminal with our investigative order sampling for 2023. As previously mentioned as well, 10th Avenue has experienced legacy pollution from the industrial uses and urban runoff over time. And our role there is to minimize risks, ecosystems, and people with that legacy pollution. You know, we do so by performing the assessments of the bay health, looking at the priority pollutants, and understanding that they and transport. Currently at 10th Avenue, we have partnered with the City of San Diego, as well as your staff, to develop a work plan. We also really appreciate the support of Tom, Sarah, and the rest of that staff that were supportive and helped us out as we did develop that work plan. And I'm happy to say that sampling has occurred in August to September of 2023 at that site as well. We also have Shelter Island Yacht Basin with our Copper TMDL. We are really proud of this program to date. It's really been a model program for stakeholder and agency coordination, not only here locally, but in our conversations with other areas experiencing similar TMDLs. And so it's really been to date a long-term investment by the Shelter Island boating community. And it's really a success story because it's the success to date has been done with no mandate. We've had all voluntary initiatives to reach the pieces of success that we have to this point, both from the boating community, from the from collaboration with your regional board, as well as other entities involved in the studies, such as the DPR and the boat yards and the hull cleaners as well. From 2011 to 22, we built a very robust data set via special studies that we've looked at paint use, we've looked at water quality, we've looked at basin hydrodynamics, we've looked at updating that conceptual model, as well as really understanding hull cleaning contributions. And a lot of the data generated, like you said, has been looked at in other locations throughout California because it's really been on the forefront. And it's really been that collaborative effort that has allowed us to generate this data. So moving forward, at your meeting last month, Dave had mentioned that we're looking to switch gears a little bit of how to approach the Shelter Island TMDL, and we're going to have the DPR continue to perform the monitoring that is associated with the regulation that was in place in 2018. Our carbon reduction program at the port, which we've spoken to you about in previous presentations, continues to be implemented. Our boat fleet continues to remain non-copper. We continue to encourage the use of alternatives, and we continue to look at ways to further reduce copper in Shelter Island Yacht Basin. We're also working very closely with your staff to shift our focus from that numeric water quality objective to an ecosystem approach. And that's really going to align nicely with the efforts of the Unified Monitoring Program that Wayne's been working diligently with the agencies around San Diego Bay. I'm going to shift gears now. From our hydrosphere to our atmosphere, it would be really nice if we didn't talk a little bit about the air quality efforts going on at the port as well. You know, we've been focused here on sediment water quality, but a lot of the air pollution can enter the bay through deposition. And so we really have a lot of efforts on the air side as well. Our maritime clean air strategy is really looking to help clean up the air, serve the environmental justice community, as well as electrify the sustainable freight link with all of our maritime operations. We have a lot of really cool initiatives going on around the bay. For the interest of time, I can't touch upon all of them, but we're really proud. We just received the first all-electric mobile harbor cranes in North America. We have our port-owned fleet that is currently going on with electrification. We have shore power at a couple other terminals, and we also have a microgrid project happening at our 10th Avenue Marine Terminal. Now, I talked a little bit about pollution reduction, but on the managing resources side, we have a lot of really fun, innovative, and very highly technical breakthroughs that are going on, and I'm going to turn that over to Eileen to talk a little bit more about those projects.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully this will work. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, board members. Through the port's Blue Technology Incubator, we're working to facilitate the development of emerging sustainable aquaculture and port tech innovative pilot projects by assisting in the creation, development, and scaling of our new water-dependent business ventures. Through the incubator and other grant-funded initiatives, the port is building a portfolio of nature-based solutions that advance some of our important priorities. which also align with the state's 30 by 30 goals and the Baywide Port Navy Integrated Natural Resources Management Plan. So San Diego Bay has over 2,600 acres of eelgrass, with the vast majority of it in South San Diego Bay, and the Port and the Navy have been monitoring eelgrass since the mid-90s. And with the assistance of MARAD, their Maritime Environmental and Technical Assistance Program, the port in partnership with the Navy, we just completed our year two blue carbon study, which was touched on earlier by Mr. Anderson, and the amount of carbon that is being sequestered in the eelgrass beds in San Diego Bay is quite extensive.
So what was that number again? That was a huge number.
You were right. It's about 107,000 metric tons of carbon that's being sequestered in the eelgrass beds in the bay.
Wow, that's almost more than the darn redwoods.
So this study is very important for blue carbon ecosystems, obviously sequestering carbon. But eelgrass beds also help protect shorelines and improve with coastal resiliency. And it, of course, has been a very hot topic in the legislation, and both in California and in back in D.C., and the port is actively tracking all of that legislation. So in San Diego Bay, the shorelines differ dramatically from hard-developed shorelines to soft shorelines. Over the past few years, we've implemented a couple of nature-based solutions that value the existing shorelines by providing habitat and improving water quality, resiliency, sequestering carbon, plus other ecosystem services, while also providing that very important shoreline stability. A couple of projects that we've done is E-Concrete, which is the coastlock interlock tide pools in Harbor Island, which at low tide can be seen by the public. And then our Living Shorelines project in South Bay, which help with erosion and provide habitat for native oysters.
So before you move on, can I ask you a question? Those round, like, plugs, are those?
So that's our, those are our reef balls. Those are about, they're about 3 by 3. Uh-huh. They weigh several hundred pounds, and that's to, that's what's attracting the native oysters to those reef balls.
Uh-huh.
In a follow-up on that, I think the first time they presented a while ago before your time, those were pretty, just look like concrete. Looks like it's working pretty good. They're all green and everything. They get the algae going and all that.
So, correct. The E-Concrete, which is the interlocking tide pools on the top, and I have more pictures to show the growth on them a little later on, but the reef balls to attract the native oysters are on the bottom. And those, we about to do our second year of monitoring, and we've had very good success with growth and attracting the native oysters to those reef balls. So here's E-Concrete. After 2 years of monitoring, you can see the photos on the right. They are filled with oysters, mussels, numerous species of algae, octopus, lobsters. They have surprised us in how much growth they have on those E-Concrete
in two
blocks.
Years?
2 years.
That's astonishing.
Yes. Within 6 months, they had quite a bit of growth on them. So they mimic tide pools, and they are very successful at mimicking those tide pools. We also just received a grant working with the Navy from Old CC, and it's a community partnership program that will allow us to actually take a look at every shoreline around San Diego Bay, look to see what type of habitat value it has, and to make recommendations for changing out what's there if needed, when repairs are needed to provide more habitat structure, maintaining that structural stability. Two other projects that we are working with startup companies, FredSense is real-time water monitoring metals that if you can take samples during a storm event, if you have a positive hit, you can take positive actions. And so they're in the process of getting approvals from EPA to certify that that it was test results. And then Ecospheres is helping with looking at how much PCBs can be pulled out of the sediments, which is very important for to be able to, if it's successful, still evaluating the data, to be able to use that those materials around piers, docks, and wharfs so those piers, docks, and wharfs don't have to be removed if there's contamination found. So the port continues to work with several nonprofits to provide education to about 25,000 students annually within our watershed regarding pollution prevention and natural resources. The kids get to take field trips to the Maritime Museum, Living Coast Discovery Center. They go whale watching, in addition to numerous other projects, learning about pollution prevention and education. And of course, we have several volunteer events that remove over about 9,000 pounds of debris every year. We'd like to thank, oh, we left. Audubon was here earlier. They are help us with volunteers. So very important events that also help us educate the public about pollution prevention. And with that, obviously, we could not do any of this without the assistance of our partners. We have lots and lots of partners that we work with on numerous different initiatives. It takes a village, and community engagement is very vital. So we also want to thank you for allowing your staff to sit on our Environmental Advisory Committee. It's very important to have your presence there, and you've been working with us for years on that committee. So thank you for that support on making that committee work move forward. So with that, we are more than happy to answer any more questions that you might have.
Thank you. We'll start with Board Member Shapiro.
This question goes back to your briefing on copper. And I appreciate all the work you're doing and the boatyards, and we've been down to visit them, and I know that they're cooperating amazingly well. But my understanding is it's a drop in the bucket compared to what's coming off of our streets and from the airport. I know the airport's doing a lot. Do you have data on that? Or what percentage of the copper that you're dealing with really comes from the boatyards versus brakes on our cars?
Yeah, so the link in the boatyards to the brakes on the cars, I think, is, you know, the boatyard is where most of the boaters in Shelter Island, for example, will seek out getting their bottoms painted. And so where they come into this play is having alternative products available, having the capabilities to apply the said alternative products, because some have different application processes. And so, you know, what we found helpful with our outreach is they are all willing to take in new products, try alternatives, try these different methods, and really try to help dial in. You know, there's a little bit of work being done down there right now with some really promising alternatives. And so, you know, we're staying tuned to stay tuned on some of that too. Hopefully we'll have some more success stories to stand up here in about a year and report on that. As far as the runoff from the street, the City of San Diego does monitor the MS4 and the receiving water in Shelter Island for copper under the TMDL. And so I can't speak to that data, but, you know, they are on that end of the monitoring. And as far as I know, they're not finding anything out of compliance. Again, I can't speak to that because that is not our jurisdiction, but that is being monitored as part of the input too. And it's expected or observed to be minimal in Shelter Island at the moment.
I appreciate,
yes.
Appreciate that. Thank you. So far. It just, you know, I'm just worried that we focus on boat owners because that's a good target. And if that's, you know, originally my information was it was overwhelmed by the amount that came off of the roads. And I know the airport's trying to capture everything now, and you know, they're moving along pretty fast with that. Okay, so that being monitored, at least in Shelter Island, it's not an issue.
But. Yeah, exactly. And what we have found through the various special studies and the angle monitoring that we have done over the last 10 plus years is that the model that was put in the TMDL originally seems to be pretty accurate for Shelter Island in terms of percentage of inputs from various sources.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Would you mind going back a few slides that had one of the images on it was sunken seaweed. So it's at the very beginning of portion of the presentation.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my comment is that that group of people that you put up on the board, it's not a village, it's a community.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. You just... There you go.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I got stung, Suey. So that I just had a question about two of the pictures. That Echo Concrete is what you just showed us at the end, right? That bottom left picture?
Correct.
Okay, great. And what is Sunken Seaweed?
So they're a startup company that is looking at experimental research on the growth of algae and seaweed in the bay. They're on Grape Street Pier, North Bay, and they are looking at growing seaweed and algae to the culinary trade. And this is their research arm of their business. They have expanded their operations quite extensively up in Humboldt Harbor, but this is where they're doing all their experimentation. And they were even provided funding from RPE, which is a federal program for experimental research.
Well, thank you very much, Port of San Diego.
So just want to say thank you to Karen, Kelly, and Eileen for sharing all the great stuff that they're doing over at the port. And you can see there's quite a bit of alignment with their efforts as it relates to our practical vision and our interest in protecting, enhancing, and restoring the key beneficial uses. So next up is Chantry Davis from the Navy, who's going to share what they've been doing in the Bay.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Canty and board members. It's very nice to be here. Those presentations were absolutely fantastic. And originally I was going to come up here and say that you saved the best for last, but after seeing those, I don't know if I can say that anymore. I do want to just quickly introduce myself. My name is Chantry Davis. I am the compliance division head for the Navy in the Southwest region, which covers all the Navy bases in California, Nevada, even some little spaces out there in Arizona. Obviously today I'm talking about stuff focused here in San Diego and around the Bay. Some of the things I'm going to touch on actually are a little bit outside my area of expertise, but I brought along some friends to make sure that we can answer any questions that might come up. The first slide that I have kind of goes through what Sean brought up, which was out there at Naval Base Coronado Site 9. I would say that he stole my thunder, but he did such a good job talking about it. And so I just want to kind of reinforce some of the things that happened this year. Obviously, the site has kind of a long storied past to it. But over the past year, we have made some great progress, as Sean mentioned. Last year, at about this time, the board recommended doing some benthic sampling to kind of answer some of those unanswered questions. We began planning that sampling early in the year and actually executed it in September. Well, I should say most of it in September. The sampling covers kind of two different things. One is benthic sampling, the other one is sediment core sampling. And so there's different tools or methods to collect these types of samples. Van Veen is the benthic sampling, and then core sampling was done through a method called VibraCore. We were able to collect all of the benthic samples that we had discussed, and we got half of the core samples. And so we realized that this VibraCore method is not exactly the best method for collecting these core samples. So we're back to kind of reviewing some alternate tools to finish up the core sampling at the locations that we agreed on. I'm looking to talk a little bit later this month about those different alternatives. And then once we have the data back from this sampling effort, it'll really inform kind of the path forward at this site. The picture that's there is actually one of the core samples that you can see kind of what the sediment looks like there. The next topic that I wanted to kind of go over, again, something that board may be familiar with, is trash cleanup at Trace Creek. The first bullet there says that we've been doing it for, the Naval Base San Diego has been supporting this effort for 10 years. Actually talking with the board a little bit last week, or talking with some folks last week, we actually found out it actually may be closer to more than 20 years. I think it may have started around 2001 timeframe. So it's been some time that Naval Base San Diego has been helping to collect some of the trash there coming out of Choyas Creek, which is a fantastic effort and I think beneficial to everybody kind of in the area. One of the things last year, or I should say this year, that was interesting, and if you know, growing up in San Diego, surfing here, you know that after a big rain event, you get a lot of extra stuff in the creek or rivers that are coming out. And unsurprisingly, last year with the incredible amount of rains that we got an incredible amount of trash coming out of the creek there. In fact, we collected almost 240,000 pounds of trash, which is about a 260% increase from the year prior. So just a fantastic amount of trash that's coming down. The picture there kind of shows how the trash is collected. We've got some kind of spill response booms that are across the opening of that creek. And then as the trash kind of collects, we come in with equipment to kind of pull it out, put it into containers and take it away appropriately. You know, this is something that we've been working on for some time and something that we want to continue to do throughout the future. And so we're working on kind of a cost-sharing agreement with the city of San Diego to make sure that this is something that we can continue to do no matter what in the future. It kind of got a little bit stalled up this summer. It seems like it was kind of going back between legal departments. We're hoping that we can get some more traction with that as we're headed into another rainy season here, which might be a big one. So we're looking to move forward on that. Just real quick, I'll show a quick graph. As I mentioned, this really shows just the drastic increase last year that we had compared to the years before. Which is pretty interesting. And I will mention there's kind of two trash collection efforts. One is, you know, like I mentioned through the creek there. The other one is kind of along the shoreline trash cleanup. There's a lot smaller numbers, but there's some trash cleanup done that's kind of in and around the shorelines as well in that area.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. You didn't generate that trash.
Right. A lot of it's coming from, you know, everything that's
kind
of.
So thank you for cleaning it up.
Oh, thank you. No problem. I agree. Yes, it's a great effort. I think it's mutually beneficial. So the last topic I want to talk about actually was mentioned a few different times already from the Dream Team and the port as well, which is eelgrass. The Navy is working to complete an environmental assessment to expand eelgrass bank here in San Diego Bay, and it shows a couple of areas where we're looking at expansion. So the reason for, you know, having this eelgrass bank and expanding it is to, you know, the eelgrass bank is for, you know, when we have critical mission critical infrastructure projects. A couple of examples that come to mind are Naval Base Point Loma had a couple of piers that had reached the end of their service life, needed to be replaced. Unfortunately, when you have to do construction in the bay, there's a potential that you might impact an eelgrass area or something like that. So we have this eelgrass bank to make sure that regardless of our, our infrastructure upgrade efforts, that we maintain the eelgrass in a healthy eelgrass habitat in the bay. So expanding, you know, going through the effort to expand this eelgrass bank makes sure that in the future, as, you know, if further projects are needed or whatever happens, I know that if anybody watches the news, there's been a big shift towards operations kind of in the Pacific area. Pacific fleet is increasing. So, you know, this helps us to make sure that we can maintain the eelgrass, a healthy eelgrass habitat in the bay, regardless of any increases that might come. Just to touch on, you know, public review comment period was completed. We're looking at a completion date for that environmental assessment in April. And this final slide, Board Member Warren, I think might kind of answer a little bit of the question that you had answered before, which was, looking at how the eelgrass is doing. So, you know, annually the Navy and the port look at, I think it's about 20 different parsecs that we evaluate on an annual basis. And that data is in the graph below. And then we also do, as was mentioned, a triannual bay-wide survey, try to complete survey of eelgrass within the bay. The data that we have so far, as it kind of shows on there from many years of looking at it, is that it does seem that there's an increase in the actually coverage of eelgrass, at least in the transects that we're looking at, which I think is a good indicator of how eelgrass is doing. That kind of covers what I have for the board today, pending any questions that you might have.
Questions?
You mentioned that your unit of measurement was parsecs.
Transects.
I thought parsecs was a universal.
Yeah, no, I thought it was funny. Transects.
You confused me. I'm going, oh my God.
I must have watched Star Wars last night or something. I don't know.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chu, do you have any closing remarks?
I do. Hopefully it won't take too much longer. I apologize for the length of this. I'm sure you guys, I know you guys all took your biological breaks earlier, but I'm sure we're all ready for a break. So I will close here. One, thank you, Chantry, for your presentation. I think that was helpful for all of us to understand how the port and the Navy and the board are all kind of working towards similar goals. I just want to close with, I think now you see how, these internal channels of communication that have been established by our work group has really allowed our programs to coordinate their work more and is setting us up to be even more effective in the future. So because of the communication coordination of the work group members, we've been able to communicate with our external partners and stakeholders like the port and Navy more effectively. And through this work group effort and coordination, we're able to align the collection of sediment quality objectives related data for the investigative orders issued by the site cleanup program and the investigations being conducted by the Navy in consultation with the site restoration military facilities unit to all take place in August, September, around the same time as the sediment quality sampling being coordinated by the port for the Regional Harbor Monitoring Program and the Southern California Bight Regional Monitoring Program. So the coordination and collection of these sediment quality data for that to happen all around the same time from all of these programs would likely never have happened in the past before we formed this work group. So now we're actually going to get several great comparable data sets that we can use to assess conditions going forward and track progress as we continue implementing our programs for the strategy to protect and enhance and restore those key beneficial uses. This work group is also communicating and coordinating more around controlling discharges of pollutants from watershed sources into the bay more effectively. So we plan on coming back and providing more information about those efforts at a future update. Finally, we're also working on sharing information and communicating better with the public and our external partners and stakeholders by reworking the Strategy for a Healthy San Diego Bay webpage, which if you look at is just a long list right now of a bunch of documents. So instead of that, we're planning on reorganizing that page so that the public can find what they're looking for a little bit easier. We're keeping the seven steps of the strategy kind of at the top just so everybody knows what they are. But now we're going to have three tabs at the bottom with information and links to documents and web pages of interest. So the first one, the first tab is going to identify the key beneficial uses of the bay, which is step one of the strategy. And you'll have some fact sheets about, what those key beneficial uses actually are. The second tab provides information about our strategic water quality assessment approach for the bay, along with a section that's going to expand, providing links to assessments and monitoring plans and reports related to the key beneficial uses, which is part of step two of the strategy. And then the last tab provides links to the programs, projects and sites that the board staff are working on related to protecting and restoring the key beneficial uses, grouped into expandable sections by board functions like planning and standards, investigation and assessment, permitting and enforcement and cleanup. And then there's a last section that'll have links to the different visualization tools that we have for the data and to look at the different sites that are in the region and in the Bay. So thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to come in front of you and show you the work we've been doing. So we're available now for any additional questions you might have at this time.
Any questions? You have a question? Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, please.
I had too much coffee. So we're achieving meaningful net gain in the Bay on a regular basis on eel grass and wetlands, right? Is that what this is all
about? I think that is definitely the goal. And I think eelgrass is one of those areas where, like, we are actually, or the Navy and the Port are actually measuring on a regular basis, and they can show that there are gains and improvements in the coverage. What Chad is doing with the bioassessment studies, that's going to tell us about the functionality of those eelgrass beds. And that is actually the more interesting aspect of it, right? Because then we're going to get a sense of how successful those expansions are and what additional benefits are being achieved through those expansions. So yeah, I mean, everything we're doing is kind of moving in the right direction, and I think the strategy is really helping us do that.
And are those partners aware that are in Dr. Henry's memory that we're looking to achieve those meaningful net gains? Or do they still work with an old, what was known as loss philosophy?
I don't know about our partners, but we're always working with the philosophy of, you know, let's get some gains. I know our 401 program takes that to heart. And, you know, there are things happening within the watershed that is moving in that direction. So that's something we can probably come back to talk about in the future.
Thank you. Any questions? Do we have any questions from Zoom? And any questions from the audience from this very informational and interesting presentation? Thank you very much, and thank your team very much and our partners. We'll take a brief break, and we'll come back and establish a quorum and take care of our business at 11:35. Establishing a quorum. So, Chris, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
Ms. Warren?
Here.
Chair Cantu?
Here. We have a quorum. So we'll start with our board minutes. I'll entertain a motion for the adoption of September 13th board minutes. Thank you. Do you have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
I have to abstain. I wasn't here. Can we that ruin our quorum?
Good. We're good.
Okay.
We're good.
And Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carries. We have approved the minutes. We have the consent calendar now. Does anybody wish to remove the item number 3, waste discharge requirements for Shamrock Sand and Rock Corporation at Aguante Plant Escondido from the consent calendar. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify, or would you please call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Chair Kanju?
Aye. Motion carries. So now we are at our action item number 6, waste discharge requirements for Jeanette Tech, industrial wastewater reuse for irrigation, San Diego County. We have, Genentech. That's right. Sorry. We have a presentation and we're looking forward to this item. We seem to have lost our audience.
Turn off the air conditioning and just cut it off.
Put your hat on. Maybe that'll keep you warm.
Is it on? Yes. Good morning again. My name is Mahsa Izadme. I'm a water resource control engineer in Groundwater Sustainability and Protection Unit. And today I'm going to talk about agenda item number 6, waste discharge requirements for Genentech Incorporation, industrial wastewater reuse for irrigation. Here is an overview of my presentation. First, I will start with giving some background about Genentech Incorporation. And the picture on the right side is an aerial map of the facility location. Then I will talk about the treatment process that Genentech use for its pharmaceutical products. And then I will dive into hydrologic unit and basin plan water quality objectives. And then I will talk about the impact of or the effects of adopting this order on water sustainability. And lastly, I will tie it all together with what we are here for, which is the consideration of tentative order number R9-2023-0014 and give our staff recommendation and answer any question from board members and members of the public. Genentech is a member of the Roche family, which is a Swiss multinational healthcare company, and it's the fifth largest pharmaceutical company in the world by revenue. And it's also the leading provider of cancer treatments globally. And Genentech is a biotechnology company that produces bioengineered human health products locally. And as you can see in the graph, it shows the facility location, which is located at One Antibody Way Oceanside. So this graph displays the potable water usage in Genentech, which broke down into three different categories. First, sanitary, such as restroom, cafeteria, and the second is utility and manufacturing process operation, which include treatment process and maintenance and cleaning. And the last one is for the landscape irrigation. Before we proceed, I'd like to point it out that I will referencing to this graph again in next few slides. Genentech treats up to 106,000 gallons of potable water per day to treat through the filtration, softening, membrane separation, deionization, and distillation to purify and treat the potable water into the high daily quality water, which we call it ultra high quality water for using in the pharmaceutical production line. The graph on the right shows the reverse osmosis in the Genentech facility, and the right one is the water softener with attached brine tank. I will circle back to ultra-high quality water, but let's first talk about the maintenance and cleaning. Thank you.
That's an improvement. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you so much. Okay. You've seen this graph before. This shows that one of the primary usage of potable water in Genentech is for maintenance and cleaning, which includes backwash from multi-filters, regeneration rinse from softener, carbon filters backwash, and reverse osmosis reject. So the industrial wastewater that produced during this maintenance and cleaning process discharged to the Pacific Ocean via City of Oceanside Ocean Outfall under the NPDES permit. So as you saw, the potable water goes through good treatment process to produce ultra high quality water for two purposes in the Genentech. The first one is for the biological manufacturing process, which include cooling towers, chillers, clean steam generators, and boilers for the pharmaceutical production line. And the second purpose is for the maintenance operation, which include flushing during proofing phases and cleaning place system. So the industrial wastewater that produced during the maintenance operation is still in a highly purified state, which at this time discharged to the ocean outfall. So the discharger proposed to use this portion of industrial wastewater for landscape irrigation. And I want to add that any industrial wastewater that does not meet the NPDES requirements and irrigation discharge specification sent to the City of Oceanside sanitary sewer system. So now we need to know which hydrologic unit the facility is located at to define the water quality objective with using the basin plan. So this picture shows the location of Genentech, which is located within the black outliner, which is the Carlsbad hydrologic unit. And the blue shade shows the location of Genentech, which is within the Loma Alta hydrologic area. The beneficial uses designated for Loma Alta hydrologic area include industrial service supply, but does not have any numerical water quality objectives. So we set performance goals. These are the parameters that do not have any reasonable potential to exceed or to contribute or cause any exceedance of water quality. So these parameters will be monitored at location, which already defined in the permit, on semi-annually monitoring basis. And these parameters will be reviewed with San Diego Water Board for informational purposes only and not for compliance determination. So the performance goals are not enforceable. But if any exceedance happen, the discharger will require to increase sampling frequency to find out the issue. And if it continues, then we will issue an investigative order. So now we're going to use the basin plan to define the performance goals. As you see this map, the black outliner represents the Carlsbad hydrologic unit and the blue shade location, the Loma Alta hydrologic area. So based on our best professional judgment, we use the closest geographic hydrologic sub-area to Genentech location to define our groundwater quality objectives, which are El Salto, Los Monos, and Vista hydrologic sub-areas, which they already have designated water quality objectives. This table shows the constituents which are important for us to protect our groundwater quality. Most of these numbers have the same objective for these three neighboring hydrologic sub-area, except for the bone, chloride, and total dissolved solid. So among these numbers, we choose the most stringent number to make sure that we protect groundwater quality. Adaptation of this tentative order is consistent with San Diego practical vision on protecting, restoring, and regulating the water quality, and is also protecting other beneficial users for current and future generation. So the use of sustainable water supply sources helps reducing the San Diego's region dependency on imported water and increasing the reliability of local water supply. And it's also consistent with California's governor water supply strategy because it supports to use industrial wastewater to reduce the portion of potable water usage for landscape irrigation. and also reduce the volume of industrial wastewater that's sent to the that discharged to the ocean. Board released a tentative order on July 27, 2023 and received a letter from Genentech which containing two major comments. All comments were properly reviewed and considered, and the board accept all comments and revise the order as detailed in supporting document number 5. So staff recommends the board adopt order number R9-2023-0014. And I'm happy to answer any questions. And also we have Najib, Genentech consultant here, if you have any questions for Genentech. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Before you step down, any questions?
Yeah, just a quick question. Did the discharger come to us with this proposal?
Yes.
Great. I just like, that's so nice to see.
I have a question.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to refresh our memories. How do we reconcile the, I believe, emergency, not yet permanent regulations for a prohibition for commercial landscape irrigation? So remind us where we stand with that now regarding this irrigation.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Ben, senior engineer. State of protection. I reviewed that law that just passed recently, and I guess I'll just give you my opinion.
Your opinion?
Yes. When I saw it, it was for potable water. It prohibited potable water being used for turf. And when we reviewed this discharge, we didn't think it met the definition of potable water.
Starts as potable water.
Right. It starts as potable. It's through an industrial process, which then doesn't meet so that
is
definition.
Is the process of water that we're using, the effluent that would otherwise go to the ocean, so it's not the grow water, the product water.
Right. After we do that industrial process, it no longer meets the definition of potable water to supply under DDW. You have to go through that biology reduction pathway again to have it certified as potable water.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification.
And one comment about that, it's madness to not water landscape, because it's important for our environment to have that softening and carbon sequestration in the communities.
But I think we're talking about cool water grass. We're not talking about landscape, right. But okay, grass. Yeah. It's turf.
Okay, turf. Yeah. Well, I agree on turf.
Good. Thank you. You agreed
on turf. I think interpreting in some places for the whole landscape stuff. Some cities get mixed up about the difference between, because they don't understand the distinction, you know, engineers. Anyway, how many gallons was that again? You kind of said it quickly and I didn't quite catch.
106,000 gallons per day of potable water for the whole different, the treatment right. process and everything.
That's a lot of water.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from Zoom? Okay, and any questions from the proponents? Do you have any questions of our staff or of yourself?
I do have one last question.
Sure.
Go ahead. Are you reasonably sure there's no gain of function occurring in Genentech, and if there is, that it's completely dead before it gets in the water?
So did you say organic function?
No, I didn't hear. Gain of function.
I don't know what that means.
It's gain of function is, do you know what it means, Ben?
It's a term that refers to the bacteria and the ability of the bacteria to propagate. And they did take bacteria samples of the industrial wastewater, which non-detect, is that right? They were non-detect.
Okay. Thank you. If we have no other questions, I'll entertain a motion to approve. Where is it here? Tentative order number, region 9-2023-0014.
So moved.
It's been moved. Do we have a second?
A second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Taking the time for such a minor thing to bring such a big corporation being a good corporate citizen, leading the way.
The clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
And Dr. Chair Cantu?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. So our last item, our board member requests. Do we have any? Perhaps not. Our staff has a long list of work items that they're working on, and they're fully subscribed and about another 100, 200, or 300% subscribed.
Yes.
Hey, I think we've concluded our business today. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.